In fact, this is the answer which reconciles the conflict between teaching through worksheets and teaching through parole, by talking. In the process of collecting material, you can talk to children, but not for the sake of creating agitation or cogitation of the mind, but by providing materials, by raising questions. It is not as if talking has no meaning and no value. Even talking or even hearing a talk can induce a state of silence. It is not that only when you don't talk, silence is induced. Sometimes it is the contrary. The mind begins to churn out so many thoughts because there is nothing to hold the mind on any specific point. But when somebody talks, your mind can be fixed on a topic. So there is no general dogmatic rule about it. And that was very important. Normally, what happens is, in Mahabharata takes place only when there are strong, rigid stands taken by people. This versus this. If this, then the other one is excluded. But we had to pass through a long process in which, you might say, we arrived at the following conclusions. What is the place of a lecture? What is the place of a worksheet? What is the place of silence in the process of learning? As far as my own personal learning is concerned, I can say that what I learned from this experience was that lectures are useful for only a few specific purposes. First, when you want to introduce a subject. Second, when you want to initiate a discussion about a subject. Third, when you want to create a collective atmosphere with regard to a subject. Fourth, when you want to give a resume. And fifth, when you may have made a research in a subject and you are fresh with the knowledge, and when you communicate through a lecture, as Sri Aurobindo has said in one of his aphorisms, knowledge is invincible when it is fresh. When you have made research and you have arrived at certain conclusions, when the knowledge is fresh and you speak, it is really invincible. Now, I found that apart from these purposes, when lectures are given, they are irrelevant. They are boring. Children look at the time, their watch all the time. Or they look out through the window on what is going on outside in the world. Like that young boy in the story of Tagore. I don't know if you read that story called The Post Office. This is a drama written by Tagore called Post Office, in which a child is sick. And the doctor has come and said that this child should not move out even an inch out of the room. He is almost like in a prison. And the boy, his soul is soaring out. He wants to fly in the sky. And here you imprison the child. The whole story revolves around this idea of imprisoning the child and child's wish to fly freely. In fact, this is the real state of every child, basically. Unless the child is spoiled, every child wants to fly. That is the movement of the soul. Its kinship is with the sky, because the soul is as vast. Its only equivalent is the sky. Therefore, it's a natural kinship. Like a bird, it wants to fly. Therefore, to imprison the child, and lectures could be imprisoning, because you ask a child now to sit down and listen to something which is being communicated through a lecture. This is a misuse of an instrument which can be useful otherwise. As I told you, if you reduce your utilities of lecture into these five categories, then it's a very useful instrument. But the moment you extend that use into something else, you want to explain something, you go on lecturing. I remember when I was attending, when I was a student of history at one time, I was 16 years old at that time, and my teacher of history, he started lecturing on history. And as you know, usually the teachers in the classical method, they go in a very classical way, expounding what is history, definition of history. And there are 7, 8 definitions which are given. So-and-so has said history is this, so-and-so has said history is this. The children do not even know what is the history. They have not read anything, or they have read very little. And you start by saying, definition of history which has been given by greatest historians who have mastered the whole of history. But in the very first lesson, you get all kinds of definitions, and you are told, now discuss those things. Secondly, he started by saying, the sources of history. First is definition of history, then the question is of sources of history. And the teacher started saying that there are two very ancient ages of history, the Paleolithic and the Neolithic. And then one of the most important sources of knowledge about this is the stone and the implements which are made of the stone and the terracotta. In fact, that was the first time I heard about terracotta in my life. When you don't even know what is terracotta, and the teacher says the terracotta is a source of knowledge of history. But this is the way in which history is taught. So the only thing that happens is the child becomes completely dry about the whole subject of history. You never feel inclined to read history. In fact, I always feel the textbooks are the worst enemies of education. Because textbooks give you a very defined, it is not that the textbooks are useless, but textbooks as something to be presented to the child is wrong. Once we had a very good insight into this subject, when a very beautiful book on mathematics appeared in France, Mathématique Moderne, that was the title of that book. It was a beautiful book, and Pavitrada, he himself was a great mathematician, and he had read this book. And he suggested that this book now should be introduced in classes 5, 6, 7, 8. It was a big book, but the book had to be introduced there. Now, exactly at that time, there was a big controversy in our school about medium of instruction, whether it should be French or English. And again, there was a Mahabharata on this subject, a real war. I mean, so many teachers who did not know French always found that French was being imposed. And it was argued that because Pavitrada is a Frenchman, therefore French has to be imposed upon this. This was absolutely illegitimate. But you know, human nature is like that. Everybody is critical, basically, and teachers particularly are very critical. And I have seen that when you don't know a language, you always feel a resistance to it. You always feel that somebody is imposing upon you. And a number of teachers in our school, they did not learn French sufficiently well. Even for me, it took many, many years before I could be thrust into French. To learn a language also is difficult. Now, this book was in French. And some teachers said that this book, why should it be introduced in our school, particularly when this book is very costly? Now you see how the language controversy, basically it was a question of language, of resistance to language, but difficult to say, because it is French, we don't want it. Then there was a subterfuge. And the argument was, when such books are available in English, and which are much, much, much cheaper, then why not to teach mathematics through English? It will be very economical, and the question of language is very minor. After all, whether you learn in English or French, what difference does it make? Anyway, this controversy raged for about a month. In the meantime, these books were not bought. And then, when the controversy reached a very great climax, then somebody requested Prabhupada, please put the question to the mother. And that too impartially. As though he was going to interpolate in favor of friends, and then mother could be persuaded because of some pressure. If you put in this way, the answer will be this way. If you put it in this way, the answer will be in that way. These ignorant ideas, you know, which were so much sometimes raging also. So Pavitra Das simply put the question. It was written down so that nobody can say that he put a question in such a way that mother would say that no French is necessary or anything of the kind. Pavitra Das himself, because I had a very intimate relationship with him, and he had told me, he said, Girish, I have no difficulty at all if mathematics is taught to English. Although it was our policy for a long time that mathematics and science should be taught through French, English through English, French through French, and history and geography through English, and mother tongue through the mother tongue. This was our normal policy. But when this controversy was very high, then this question was put to Pavitra Das, and he told me, he said that I have no difficulty at all from my side. Anyway, he took this question. The question was well drafted, well defined, so that it can be seen that it was transparent, impartial, and there was no weightage given in this way or in that way. And the mother kept the book with her for 2 days, both French book and the English book, both. This was costly, that was cheap. both the books were kept. After 2 days, mother said, this French book is far, far superior. This was her answer. So that was decided that this now French book had to be studied. Then Pavitra Das ordered 5 copies of the book because it was a very costly book. So we could afford only 5 copies of the book. So now came the turn of those teachers who still felt uneasy about it. They said, either only 5 books, how can we teach our children? We should give 1 copy to every child. So we had to buy, there was a proposal, we should buy about 30 copies of the book. And that would mean a tremendous budget, 30 copies, very, very costly. So once again, Pavitra Das went to the mother and said, mother, this is a big question. Shall we therefore not switch over to English book? But then came a reply which has struck in my heart very deeply. And that is relevant to the question of our text. Mother said, that textbook is meant for the teachers and not for the students. It's a real illumination in my heart. Let the teachers read the textbook, and then having read it, let them write special worksheets for the students in such a way that the worksheets are appropriate to child's inquiry. Now this was, at that time I learned, and I remembered my experience of my history learning, where my teacher was giving lectures on history on a textual basis. Then I realized that history should not be taught in a textual manner. According to the questions that the students have in their mind, a teacher who knows history quite well, he has read textbooks very well, he should write in a very interesting manner so that the child's interest in history is awakened. Now this meant a tremendous program for teachers, but I tell you, it was so beneficial to all the teachers of mathematics and students. I think that our students learn mathematics so well through this method. Now, having said this, the meaning of worksheets, teaching through worksheets, became much more clear to me. It is not merely a question of keeping silent and yet communicating. It is to put upon the teachers a greater task of digesting the whole material of the subject and communicating to the child and to every child separately, because if you lecture, then individualized learning becomes very difficult. Different children have different questions. And education becomes truly fruitful when it is individualized. Not that every education, every aspect of education should be individualized. There is another dogma. Because those people who say that education should be individualized, completely, one-to-one relationship, that is also a dogma. Just as you can say that you can lecture, and it is also true, in a lecture you can lecture to thousands of people at once, true, and everybody could be benefited. So to say that it is only when you have one-to-one education, then only education is very fruitful, that is also not true. There are certain things which you can broadcast to thousands of people at one stroke. It can create a tremendous wave of electricity in fact, and lots of insights can be created. That also is possible. So, one thing that I learned, and what mother once told me, she said there should be no dogma in education. To say only this is the method or that is the method, and then I happened to read at one time, just at that time, Sri Aurobindo's book called The Synthesis of Yoga. In fact, this is a book which I regard as the greatest book on education. Because education is yoga, yoga is education. Therefore, The Synthesis of Yoga is the greatest book on education. And there Sri Aurobindo's one sentence is very powerful. The teacher has no method and every method. This is the key sentence. Has no method and has every method. It takes you out of all dogmatism about education. In fact, if you remember this proposition, all controversies about education can cease. I myself learned this precious lesson after a long experience and long raging of a battle. Then I realized the meaning of this. It says that good teacher has no method and every method. Now, I'm saying this because every teacher here knows that our field is a field of experiment. And this is what I found in every school that I visited. Every teacher knows that he or she is making an experiment. There is a search. In fact, since mother has said that Oroville is a field of experiment, field of research, and since Oroville itself is a place of continuing education, I found this underlying current among all the teachers whom I met. Every teacher is trying to find out the right method of communicating. Even in the school of new creation, they are employing new methods of teaching language to Tamil children, where children are not taught the alphabet, but words directly.